Welcome to another episode of Pilots Say What, where we hear what pilots have to say. Today we have a guest by the name of Pascal. Am I saying that right?
Pascal,
I just want to make sure.
Yep,
all right.
Yep.
I'll let you do the honors of introducing yourself, but just so you guys know, we'll get into some different routes on how to get to the airlines. And really, I think it's just going to be interesting to hear a little bit about your background.
Sure.
But if you wouldn't mind giving us a
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go backwards. Pascal Holmes. I'm currently a captain in American Airlines. I fly the Airbus. I've been an American probably about 11 and a half years now. I started off flying on the 7576, doing international wide body, crossing the ocean out of New York, going over to Europe and pretty much anywhere in Europe, including Britain, Scotland, Ireland. That was great. It was my first introduction to Part 121, which is basically, I'll explain that a little bit, is basically any airline business where you're carrying passengers for revenue, basically. That's Part 121. That's the major airline level, basically.
Okay.
And then I switched over to the Airbus, which I currently fly. I've been on that for about 9 years now. And started out in the right seat, and then I've been a captain for the last 3 years.
Okay, yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's great. So pretty much the pinnacle. But working backwards, man, I was in the Navy. I came out of high school. I was an Army brat. My dad was 28 years in the Army, and I did the opposite thing, kind of made him mad and joined the Navy. So it was great.
I'm
it was
sure
awesome.
He loved it, man.
It was great. So, so I flew, actually enlisted. I did 4 years enlisted. I played football and ran track all the way through high school, man. I was just a dumb jock, you know?
Yeah.
So I had a C minus average and didn't really take life serious. And it wasn't until I was in my junior year of high school, we went on vacation somewhere in Italy, I think, because we were stationed over in Europe, and we were on the Mediterranean, and there was a U.S. carrier out right off the coast, and I saw these two F-14s. You know what those are, right?
Yeah,
Top Gun movie, you know? Mm-hmm. Those two F-14s flew right overhead, and they flew over to the ship, and I watched them land right in front of me from the coast. I fell in love. I was like, that's what I want to do.
That's pretty cool.
I was probably about I'd always wanted to fly since I was five, but I didn't know what type of flying. When I saw those two Tomcats landing on the carrier, I was like, that's what I want to do.
I want to try that out. Yeah. So you joined the Navy pretty young. You were like 17, right?
17, yeah. I had to get my mom's permission to enlist. Yeah. But I didn't have the grades because I played football and that was my life, you know, and I didn't know anything else. Mm. So because I didn't have the grades, I was like, well, let me start at the bottom. I'll just enlist. I'll go to the recruiter, and got my mom's permission, and graduated early at 17. And I went to boot camp and worked my way up. Went through 4 years of enlisted. And I went through a commissioning program where basically they take like enlisted sailors who are maturing now because you're a little bit older and you finally got a level head. And so basically they put you through a program. Mm-hmm. There's like 300 of people that started, and we finished with like, if you make it through, it's a year long. Mm. And you get there's 60 of us that finish, and you get a 4-year scholarship, Naval ROTC scholarship.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a cool opportunity.
Yeah, though,
you had to qualify for that or something?
You did. It was just application process, and then there was some testing you had to do, and SATs, ASVABs, ACTs. And as long as you meet the minimum, and the package was accepted, and it took me 3 tries, and I got it.
Yeah.
And basically for a year long, it's like boot camp in high school, all over, you know, everything, English, science, biology, calculus. I mean, it was crazy.
That would have been tough. Yeah.
It was tough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Non-stop.
Especially after removed from school.
Right.
It's like you have to readjust. But you did that. But this is all with the goal in mind of flying, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so the goal of that program was to become an officer. Mm-hmm. And in order to be a pilot in the Navy, you had to be an officer.
Okay.
So taking it in steps, I knew that, okay, I got to get a commission first. I got to become an officer.
Uh-huh.
So how to become an officer? I'm enlisted. So that's where this program came in.
Yeah.
Got my ROTC scholarship and went to a military academy up in Vermont, mm-hmm. which I never even knew where the heck Vermont was.
Yeah.
When I found out about the school, I was like, is that in the United States, man? I don't even know where that's at. You need a passport to get there?
Right.
You know, what's up, man? So the school was in...
I still don't know, actually. If you told me to find the point in the direction of Vermont on the map,
yeah,
I won't be able to tell
nobody
you.
Would even be able to tell
I don't know.
You, yeah.
I wonder what the viewers will say. Do you know where Vermont is? anyhow.
It's got to be one of the states. Anyway, the school that I graduated was all the way in San Diego. So I packed my car up, man, with all my stuff, which I didn't own much back then. And I drove all the way across country up to New England and showed up at a school that I never even knew or even saw and graduated there. And what happens in your senior year, Is you put a package in for what it is that you want to do in the Navy as an officer. Mm-hmm. You get three choices. Mm-hmm. So you can put like ship officer, supply officer, you know, maybe SEALs, special forces or something. And if you want to try out for that, or pilot. Mm-hmm. And so for all three, I put pilot, pilot, pilot.
Like, that's just all,
that's all I wanted, man. I didn't want anything else, right?
I'm sure. So, did anyone say anything to you?
No,
about
well,
that?
They were like, are you sure you want to waste your choice? I was like, yep. If I can't get that, I don't want anything else. Or I'll go wherever if I don't get it, you know?
Yeah, okay.
So needless to say, I was blessed and lucky, and I got pilot.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So I was 18 when I actually went through boot camp. 1920 to 1922. So 22 when I showed up to college, mm-hmm. 4 years older than most of the freshmen in my class, right?
Okay.
And then 4 years of college. So it's 8 years later after graduating high school. So mm-hmm. it's not too bad. So
no, I mean, I think some people, at least for myself, I don't think going to college at 18 is the best move. Actually, it's a waste of time and money for myself,
right?
Personally, like going at a later time, I have the right mindset and the right ambition for it.
Right.
But that being said, you're about 8 years in at this point by the time you're getting through that college, right?
No doubt. And it's more than just the age, like you just said, mature wise. Mm-hmm. If I was to show up at college, you know, at 17, 18, mm-hmm. I would have never made it through. So the mindset 4 years later was incredible for, you know, a dumb high school jock. I mean, I was so focused by that point. I mean, like no girls, no nothing, no partying. Everybody was going out partying. I was like books, you know.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
I was dedicated at that point. So mm-hmm. Naval Flight School, tough, man. Toughest 3 years of my life. it takes everything out of you physically, emotionally, spiritually. I mean, it was pretty competitive, you know. The ultimate goal is to get the wings of gold, you know, and not every pilot could say that they have can do that, right?
About what age is it that you're getting to start your flight training?
I think I was 23, turning 24.
Yeah.
What we call it boot camp for naval aviators, which is in Pensacola, Florida.
Okay.
Every aviator in the Navy starts off in Pensacola, Florida. So.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we have kind of like a 6 week course, 6-7. It's called API. Mm-hmm. Don't even ask me what that stands for. I forgot. Yeah, it doesn't even matter. It's just like boot camp, man. It's so. Like half the day is in class and you're learning like power plants, weather, navigation. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything dealing with flight school, but it's like condensed down into like a couple hours. You know, like it's crazy concentrated class.
Right.
And then you go get some lunch and then you show up at the pool and the rest of the day is in the pool. And I mean, it is 6 weeks straight of, I think we got weekends off, but 6 weeks straight of nonstop pool, school, pool, school. Oh, by the way, go home, get some rest, maybe eat a little bit, study, get up and do it all over again. Minimal,
exactly.
That's it, man. And those 6 weeks, man, if you, you know, again, we started off with, I don't know, maybe 30 in my class, mm-hmm. and we finished with like maybe 7 of us. So if you make it through that, you're good to go. And then they send you to, it's called primary. Mm-hmm. And there's two places in the Navy. You can either go stay in Florida right outside of Pensacola called Whiting Field, or go to Corpus Christi, Texas, where I went. Mm-hmm. It's another place. And so we start off flying single turboprop. Back then it was called a T-34. Mm-hmm. It's a World War II style aircraft with a sliding canopy, you know. Student in the front, instructor in the back.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But now we have something more powerful. It's beautiful. She just got rolled out a few years back. It's called the T-6 Texan. Mm-hmm. It's a single engine. Everybody starts off single engine turboprop. Everybody. It doesn't matter. So for the first year, everybody's doing the same curriculum, same syllabus. You start off with ground school. You learn basic stuff, like how do you start this thing?
Right,
how do you taxi and how do you take off and basic maneuvers and then how to land. And then it's incremental after that. And then you go up and do aerobatics and learn how to do that. And each step is probably about 2 to 3 months. And then if you pass that, you move on to the next and you move on to the next. And you finish up with like formation flying, learning how to fly formation, navigation.
You'll get it all the way into the weeds.
All the way into the weeds in the first year. Probably what Thrust Academy does and Thrust Flight does probably in the time frame that they're here, we probably do it in a much shorter time frame.
Right.
And the idea is you either keep up with it or you fail out and you're back to the fleet doing it.
Really tests your aptitude and even grit more than anything, probably.
Yeah.
You mentioned the wings of gold, right?
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about that. But right before that, I also want to ask you about you know, you had this ambition, this dream, this vision of flying, and you get to that point after, you know, you take a journey to get there, you accept that it's going to take this, this, and that, you get there. And I kind of want to ask you a few questions because it may be a little different in your experience, but sure. there's a lot of people who are like, oh, I just want to fly. I just want to fly.
Right.
Even people here at Thrust who go the civilian route and they say, I took that discovery flight and I knew I was right. And they start. And we have a lot of online conversations about, you know, well, this is hard and this is hard, or it costs a lot of money to go to flight training, or, you know, the airlines aren't hiring and things like that. But the people I talk to here love flying.
Yep.
And like a lot of those things are just secondary points to them making the decision to
right.
fly.
Right.
Not that they're not important. They are. Right. But I guess what I want to get at is, what was it like having the dream to fly and then start flying?
Dude, man, that is a great question. And it's funny you bring that up. You know, years later, I mentor now. I give back, because for me to be sitting where I'm at today, you know, oh, by the way, I'm a chief pilot now, right? So I'm in charge of like a lot of pilots. Here in Dallas, there's 4,600 pilots, you know.
Wow.
I'm one of six of us chiefs to kind of mentor and guide discipline sometimes. 4,600 pilots, the biggest base in the world. Mm. I mean, just what we have in Dallas could be as big as an airline itself. So it's a lot of responsibility. But so just to be sitting where I'm at as a captain at American Airlines and being a chief pilot, I give back. And so I mentor a lot. And people ask me all the time when I go out and I meet people, they say, I want to fly. I want to be a pilot. And I say, whoa. Do me a favor. Do one thing first before you make that decision.
Okay.
Discovery flights, I think, are the most underrated flight ever in the world. And what I mean by that is, it's great that you have ambition, right? Because we do a great job online and social media with pumping up pilots, especially today, right? Because we're in such demand. It looks great. It looks so fascinating and good money, and you're traveling the world. I'm going to tell you, there's nothing that will set the tone until you make a discovery. You go up in the air. You have it kind of like what you were telling me before we started the podcast. Like you said it and you alluded to it. When you have the controls in your hand and you're flying,
right?
It's 50-50 and it's real cut and dry. You either love it and fall in love with it, or you're like, nope, this ain't for me, right? Mm-hmm. I'll never forget my first flight. You asked about that. I went up and immediately my instructor, he's so funny because he took me up. I had never flown. I never sat foot in an airplane, because we just didn't have money growing up. I didn't have the opportunity. My dad was Army. We were never around aviation. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of nervous, because I was like, I'm either going to love it or not. I spent all this time, like you said,
I didn't know you had never been in a plane either.
Never,
when I said that.
Never. Yeah. So when we went up, I was like, this is it. I was more nervous, not about flying, but about the fact that here I am. I've been committed to this path for like 10 years by now, since, you know, sophomore, junior year in high school, that I was either going to love it or hate it. And when I went up, as soon as we started climbing up, and your first flight in the Navy, it's kind of a discovery. The instructor's in the back and you're in the front, but you're not touching controls. You're just sitting there, and they're doing all the flying. And eventually they let you fly. So it's like a mini discovery. Mm-hmm. And my instructor was a U-2 pilot. I don't know if you know what that is, but that's basically a spy plane. He was in the Air Force and he flew these U-2s, which is like up at 70,000 feet. And you know, it's like,
I think close I've seen pictures
space.
Of the U-2.
Yeah, with the big old wings, you know, and they just have cameras in there. All they do is do spy stuff and take pictures and photos. But in order to do that, you have to be a pretty successful, decorated pilot. And he was. So he tried out.
He took you up.
He's the one that took me up. I got the hardest dude there was in the whole staff, right? And so it was his challenge to, he was funny because it was his challenge to scare people away. And so when we took off, he's like, your control. So he gave it to me right away. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was like, okay. But I'd never back down, man. Yeah. And he's like, all right, this guy's got a little bit of it, you know. And then he'd take me up even higher. And then he'd start doing some really high G maneuvers, you know, and loops and stuff. And I'm just grinning ear to ear. And he's like, dude, you're not even nervous. I'm like, no, man, this is awesome. What else you got, you know? And so it was his personal goal to make me pretty much get sick before the end of the flight. Mm-hmm. He never did, you know.
Nice.
You never did. So that, but my, that's a little aggressive, but my point is you either like it or you don't. My roommate, vice versa, on the other side, same path as me, been wanting to do it since he was 5 years old. And we got airborne. He got airborne with his instructor and immediately he's like, nope, take me back. That's it. After 5 seconds of getting airborne,
really,
he's like, nope, this ain't for me, man. Take me back. And he quit that day after all of, you know, college and 3 years of flight, or this is the first year of flight school, you know, and then he's like, that's not for me. So you either like it or you don't. That's my point. And
yeah.
Flying is something that it takes a lot of aptitude. I did 4 instructor tours in the Navy. I mean, I taught pilots to land on carriers. Ultimately, wow. That was one of my most rewarding jobs I ever did. And you either have what it takes or you don't. And it doesn't matter if you're the most decorated, successful pilot in the world. After 3 years of flight school in the Navy, the last thing you do is you go land on the carrier by yourself in a fighter 10 times in the day and 6 times at night, all by yourself. And if you can't pass that, then you're back. You're done. Even after you've just completed the hard 3 years of flight school, got your wings of gold. And if you can't do it, then you're out. And one of the most rewarding jobs I did was a landing signal officer on the back of the carrier is the one to keep you safe and make sure you're not hitting the back of the boat. But I was also in charge of grading these guys and girls that were trying to finish up flight school strong. But, yeah, you know, seeing the looks, it's the most toughest thing. It's the toughest thing you'll ever do in your life, yeah, as a naval aviator. But seeing the joy and the reward on their faces when they finish, it's like you're bulletproof for the rest of your life. No one could ever say that they did, you know, what you did, which, yeah, is awesome. It's an awesome feeling.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah, that. Yeah. My dad spent a little time on a carrier in the Navy, yeah, but not he didn't do anything aviation related. But he was there, and he talks about some of those things. And I used to think that I'd be interested in working on some planes in the Navy, but I went some creative routes that took hold of me. So, you know, and here I am.
We all have something that we like.
You exactly. Know? You know, working as an instructor, mm-hmm, and then you've made your way to the airlines, and now you're captain, you're even a chief, mm-hmm, and you're like over a lot of, you have a lot of responsibility.
Yep.
I think that you have probably a lot of perspective, mm-hmm, on people who have ambition on getting somewhere in the airlines.
Absolutely.
And so, but you also have perspective on people who got there through the military,
yep,
right? So to me, I feel like it's probably easy to make a lot of cases, especially for someone who's been in the military, about using the military to get to the airlines. And I think that's an easy argument to make. What I'm wondering is, there's some people who are like, what if I don't though? What if I want to consider the option of getting there through civilian training? What are some of the benefits to not going to the military is what I'm curious about, awesome, if you could share.
Awesome yeah, question, man. That is the second most popular question that I get a lot as a chief pilot. So as a chief, I go to a lot of aviation conferences. I meet those perspectives that are trying to get to where I'm at. And mm-hmm, I love it, man. Like I said, I love giving back because I didn't have a role model.
Right.
And it's, I think it makes a huge deal when you have someone who's there that can answer these questions that you might be scared to ask, mm-hmm, or stuff like that. So I think, yeah, I take it serious, because for me to be where I'm at, like I'll say it 1,000 times, I do not take it for granted. And I try to reach down and grab somebody and bring them up. So the great question, man. Yeah. Tragically, you know, this business is an inherently dangerous business, right? First day of flight school, what they say is look to your right, look to your left. You know, some of you won't be here in 10 years. I lost 3 of my buddies in my own class, my initial flight school class. Mm-hmm. 2 of them crashed. One right in front of me on the carrier. He just spilled off the front end. It was an accident off, mm-hmm, the catapult, just hit the water and died. Another guy over the beach, I did 8 deployments over Iraq and Afghanistan, and he unfortunately was blue on blue, meaning it was friendly, he didn't get shot or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just, which most today is all just blue on blue, we call, mm-hmm, mishaps. So, you know, I lost a lot. And when you go through stuff like that, it inherently makes you realize, man, I'm just lucky to be here. And, yeah, and you take that to heart, because you're like, well, obviously I was given a second chance, yeah, so I want to make sure and make it right and give back, right?
Right.
So back to your question, man, it's a great, great question. So I didn't know anything about civilian side until, yeah, I came to American Airlines, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously the military is very, like, you know, military flying is like, oh, it's the best. And, you know, Top Gun, of course, is glorified and all the other, you know, being a fighter pilot and everything. But it wasn't until I showed up for day one flight school of ground school here at American in 7576. Oh, by the way, I'm a single seat fighter guy, and I show up at American and they want to put me on their biggest aircraft at the time, you know. Well, we did have 777, but 7576, there's 4 pilots, and you know, 300 people in the back. I'm like, this is crazy. This is unlike anything I've ever done before.
Exactly.
You know?
It was it's funny for you to say that. This is wild because it's considered like, I mean, it's easy to be like, oh, this is more tame, but it's a whole different experience.
It's a whole different experience. So it's wild. I mean, so when I got hired in 14 in American, they hadn't hired in 15 years, right? Because it was just, it wasn't, the baby boomers are retiring now, right? Those pilots that were hired right after post-Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And for Part 121, obviously 65 is the age limit, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a huge hiring back post-Vietnam. And now, unfortunately, all those pilots are now reaching their 65th birthday. So over the next, still we have about another year to go that we're losing. At American alone, we have 16,000 pilots. In a period of 5 to 7 years, we're losing 60% of the company because of the baby boomers.
Wow.
And hence the reason for these like Thrust and all these other airline academies that are really taking heed to that and pushing out good products so that we can recover most of those pilots back. So it's a great opportunity. If you want to be a pilot, now is the time to do it. Well, so
okay, there you go. Yeah. I didn't say it. Yeah. He said it.
Now's the opportunity, which leads into the question. You said, what are the advantages and disadvantages? So back to my story, you know, the hardest part of military flying was getting through flight school. Those 3 years, toughest 3 years of your life, man. You, like I said, physically, emotionally, spiritually, it's any civilian school on steroids times 10. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's so competitive. I mean, unfortunately, the mortality rate is pretty high in flight school. I mean, people are taking their own lives because they want to succeed so bad, unfortunately. Right. That's how competitive it is. Mm-hmm. So that's the hard part. You know, once you get your wings and you're going off into the fleet of your first squadron and you're flying, as long as you don't do anything stupid, don't get in trouble, don't get your wings taken away, and stay alive, for God's sakes. Like, you know, I mean, we're doing some pretty aggressive flying. I mean, I flew over New York City on 9/11. Mm. I was brand new to my first squadron, and I was 2 weeks out of flight school when 9/11 happened. And I mean, you want to talk about growing up quick. At that point, I already thought that I had grown up. Yeah. But when I'm sitting in the plane over New York City watching a smoking hole in downtown New York, and I'm brand new. I didn't even know, like, what is going on?
The world is really, like,
falling apart around you. And I'm brand new sitting in my cockpit, just like, wow, just a junior guy in the squadron. And so you grow up quick, you know. Now, that's pretty aggressive because of what that happened. But even if none of that did happen, you show up to your first squadron, you're the junior person, and you get, you know, you get ribbed a little bit because you're the new person, and mm-hmm. you get a little probationary period. And once you're accepted into the squadron, you're part of a brother sisterhood. It's a tight family, you mm-hmm. know. And so we literally protect each other because you have to know that person flying off your wing has your back, right? So. Right. So anyway, that was pretty eye-opening. And so because of 9/11, normally in a career you might do 2 or 3 deployments. I did eight back-to-back. I never got out of the flight deck from 2001 till I retired in 2014. So I had a lot of hours. So again, as long as you don't die, get in trouble, or do anything stupid, get your wings taken away, the hardest part was flight school, right? After that, it's just stay alive and stay out of trouble.
So the military is a little, I mean,
little.
I guess you say that, to me, what I'm hearing is that there's a lot of things you can talk about going into the military.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't sound like you would trade that. I mean, you can't trade your story, right?
Mm-mm.
But you're saying, hey, here's what it's kind of like. So
absolutely.
That's a good perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would not have thought about that.
So when I came to American, it was, they hadn't hired in 14, 15 years, like I said. So it was me and an Air Force F-16 guy who got out of Air Force. So him and I are sitting in the back of the class. And the rest of the class is folks that went the civilian route. Mm. We both had no clue. What's the civilian route? Like, how do you become a pilot if you don't go become the military? You know, we thought it's either military pilot or nothing, right?
Yeah.
So we learned quickly, no, there's a regional civilian path to get to the regionals. And then regional guys and girls work their way up to try to become an airline pilot as well. My best friend to date, he was in my flight school class and day one American, and he took me under his wing to show me what commercial airline flying. He was a regional guy, mm-hmm. but we didn't understand. It's flying unlike any of us ever done in the military. I mm-hmm. mean, you're flying, you know, point A to point B. You got passengers, you got flight attendants, you've got, you know, airport gate agents and all those people there. Like, who are all these people and what are they doing? Like, you just have no clue, you know.
Yeah.
And no one sits you down and explains all that, right? Mm-hmm. So your learning curve is quick. But my mm-hmm. point is, day one of flight school, him and I are sitting in the back of the class, and I mean, I dropped bombs. I did some crazy stuff over Iraq and Afghanistan, and I'm pretty accomplished pilot at this point, right? But I'm still sitting in the back of that classroom with my eyes wide open as if it was day one of flight school, because I just could not believe how different that world was. And him and I both, we just respected the fact that we were lucky enough to be there in that classroom day one at American Airlines. I mean, or same thing, United, Delta, Southwest. I'm sure they feel the same way, right? So my point is, so I got to learn quickly the civilian route, and what I've learned is,
because you're surrounded by people who went
surround
that route.
all of them, right? And my buddy Jay, he sat me down and explained, well, here's how I went. You know, I had to pay my way, like through thrust flight, you know, and get all your certifications and go through class, and sometimes you're paying all this on your own, you know, just to get your certifications. And then once you're done with getting all your certifications, then comes the hard part, right? Now you got to get your flight hours, and you got to get a job, or be an instructor, and it's all about getting the hours and getting paid nothing. You know, I mean, I don't know still today how a civilian person, you try to have a family, you try to have somewhat of a life, and you're getting paid nothing, all to just get those hours. And so
I mean,
that's,
we have people who changed careers and have families
yeah.
and are going through our program and now are CFIs,
Right.
and they work hard and they're here, and I see them and I talk to them a lot,
Yeah.
and I think to myself, man, they're dedicated. That's what I think
Dedicated.
to myself. I don't think, oh wow, if they can do it, anyone can do it. I
Oh
think,
my God.
wow, man, they're
You
dedicated.
have to. You have to be, right? Yeah. So the only advantage, so the disadvantage, when you finally get a job and then you get hired with some minor company, some, you know, some a lower company that's going to take you, but you're flying six legs a day and you're getting paid nothing, and you know, but who cares? Because if they're going to give you something to fly to get you the hours, that's the most important thing, right? And then you're lucky enough to get to the regionals, and there again, you're maybe a little bit better of a paycheck, but not much, and you're flying a lot, you know, getting paid like nothing. It's crazy. But the advantage, that's the question, right? Advantage, disadvantage. Commitment for the military as a fighter guy, you got about 7 to 8 years commitment. And that's after 3 years of flight school. So that's 10 years right there. Versus I think most, and I think I even saw the sign coming into thrust, like, or over on the flight line, 4 years from the sidewalk to the flight line. In 4 years, you can get your certifications, come through a school like this, go get a job, or whatever you can to get the hours. You know, we have at American, we have the American Airlines Cadet Academy. We also have every airline, major airline has an academy like that. We literally are taking pilots or would-be pilots off the street, putting them through this something like thrust. Everything's paid for if you're accepted into it. And become a CFI, and you get your hours, and then you're guaranteed in some cases, in some levels, a regional job, you know, or some job which will get you to the regional level. We just accepted our first American Airlines Academy person. I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago now. He was a pastor, just like I'm sure Thrust has a demographic of students like that. He was a pastor at a chapel, and he's like, I want to fly. And from day one to the day he showed up, American Airlines, was almost exactly 4 years later. So 4 years to get to the exact same place of me sitting in a flight in that classroom on day one at American, and I'm sitting in the classroom with folks that are, you know, maybe at that point now it's 4 years, but you know, 11 years ago when I was, they were there in half the time that I was, you know, and I'm a lot older, you know,
You know,
so
and we
that's
have
the
people come
advantage.
in, who have, you know, no experience, like you're saying, like the switching careers, and maybe it's something they're always interested in. Actually, well, we'll be talking to the student soon, and maybe like making a video with him, because he explained to me that he's a little older. He explained to me that his wife and daughter, after realizing that he always wanted to fly but didn't, because he wanted to be take a certain route to help provide for the family, well, they like finagled everything and said, you're gonna go train at Thrust Flight. And they basically set up everything so that he could come train as a pilot. And so he's here now. He's gonna be a CFI soon. He's been here for maybe not even a year. And he's gotten through his like main ratings, and then he's gonna step into a CFI role and really sharpen his skills. So it's pretty
Amazing.
cool. And
It's amazing.
now there's some work going into there. He has two people behind him, you know,
Exactly.
and then he's not working. You know, he's training.
Right.
So
Right.
but the path, I guess, what it sounds like I hear you comparing the most is it's gonna be the time frame.
It really is. That's what it comes down to. And where that ultimately is the advantage, dude, is the fact that you show up at American younger, ideally on average, right? At a younger age. And the goal is to get to the airline, stamp the day you get hired, stamp the day you get there to get your seniority number. Mm-hmm. And remember, 65 is the age limit, right? So the longer you're playing the game, the longer you're going to be able to make some good money and fly. And that's the ultimate game.
So. I've heard that before too, that some people are like, they're looking, they know they want to fly. Mm-hmm. So that's checked, right? That's first priority. Second priority is like, well, I want to make the most of it. I want to make them a lot of money.
ultimately.
And there's an argument there that if you start 4 years earlier than if you went a different route, like through college or something like that, that you're going to make millions of dollars more if you stay until retirement.
I hate to say it, man. But. You know, when you put it on paper, you know, I'm not a finance accountant guy, but you're talking 1 to 2 years is a difference of a mil, you know. I mean, you will make a pretty good amount. I mean, and not to mention, oh, by the way, the lifestyle, the quality of life is nowhere else can you work. You know, we average 15 to 17 days a month. And yet make more than a 40-hour a week person at some job, you know.
And someone says, 10. And I don't really like to say this because I feel like some people take it. I wouldn't want to offend pilots as a non-pilot saying it.
Sure.
But I hear some pilots say, "This is the best part-time job you'll ever have."
And that's true. That's a true statement. I mean, you're working half a month, getting paid than more than what most people get paid for a full-time job, 40-hour a week for 4 weeks. You know, we're limited by FAA regulations of rest and days of that we can work. Mm-hmm. So 15 to 17 is about on average. Mm-hmm. As a chief, that don't matter. I work every day, 30 days a month.
Right.
But as a regular line pilot, 15 to 17 days, and you're getting paid pretty decent. I mean, that's nowhere else can you get that. You know.
Yeah. It seems like hey. I don't like to say risk, but sure, like high risk, high reward.
Oh, for sure.
You put in the work and you get the payoff for
absolutely.
It. Absolutely. Yeah. Honestly, I feel like we could go all day. I feel like I could sit here and ask you more about. Absolutely. I like your perspective on your military experience, not just because you loved going through the journey, but also because I like what you took out of it. To me, I could sit here and I could have a personal conversation with you all day about it. Unfortunately, we try to keep these episodes less than an hour. We'll see how well we can do there. Lee's going to cut some stuff up. But we're coming to the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And I'm imagining people are still listening. And for those who are, I'm imagining you enjoyed this so far. So if you have any questions for Mr. Pascal, please put those in the comment section. We'll forward those over to him. We'll try to get, as much information out of this guy as we can while we have him.
Absolutely.
Thank you guys for joining us on another episode of Pilots Say What, where we hear what pilots have to say. Thank you, Pascal, for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.